This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Oh, gosh.
Welcome to the Bechdel cast, okay?
Yeah, ready to party? Ready to sausage party?
Yes, I am, because Yikes. Today is my shameless plugging day. Today is the day where we are doing a movie that is technically about hot dogs, but is also, I don't know, but we're celebrating the release of Raw Dog, my first book.
Woo!
When you're hearing this, it will be out. You should definitely go buy it at your local bookstore. Amazon fuckery, please. Mm-hmm. I'll accept a Barnes & Noble, but only if you're in a difficult only if you're not near an independent bookstore, which you probably are. So go get, it's my book about the history of hot dogs and a road trip I took in 2021 trying hot dogs across the country. It is about leftist politics. It is about workers' rights. It is about the history of how American jingoism is connected to the hot dog. It's about following people around in the Wienermobile. It's about falling in love with Joey Chestnut, but also it's complicated and I don't really fuck with him, but I do have a crush on him.
Gross.
Problematic fave Joey Chestnut and my king, Takeru Kobayashi, as well as all of the kind of twisted, bizarre. This is actually maybe where it overlaps with Sausage Party, which we're talking about today, which mercifully does not come up in the book. There was no space and I didn't want to.
No.
I just didn't want to. But in professional hot dog eating, there's a lot of historical issues regarding racism and gender discrimination within that sport. Yes, it's a sport. No, I will not be taking questions or arguments about it. It is a sport. And that is something that has in common with the movie we're discussing today. So shameless plug at the beginning.
Oh, you mean sexism and racism and all of those things?
Yes. Yeah. But one thing it doesn't have that Sausage Party does is bad writing. It's a good book. You should buy it. Or if you're not in a position to buy it, we'll link in this episode of different ways to request that it be brought to your local library. That's also a great way. There's also an audiobook that's narrated by me.
Wow.
I know. They're like, hey, podcaster, get in that booth. And I did. And my audio engineer's name was Tim, and he was a vegan, and he was like, oh my God.
Oh, gee whiz.
We really learned from each other that week. He's from New Zealand, kind of iconic, and he's like, I can't do a New Zealand accent, but he was like, this country's so fucked. And I was like, that's right, Tim. That's right. And that's an example of something that did not pass the Bechdel test. Me and Tim shooting the shit.
Yeah.
Was it pleasant? Yes.
Of course.
But did not pass.
And which, what a wonderful transition to our show and what it's about. Yeah. So this is the Bechdel Cast. Hello, my name is Caitlin Durante.
My name is Jamie Loftus, author of Raw Dog, out now.
And this is our show where we analyze movies through an intersectional feminist lens using the Bechdel... Well, it was a weird way to say that. The Bechdel. Using the Bechdel test simply as a jumping off point to initiate a far larger conversation about representation and such in film. The Bechdel test being a media metric, sometimes called the Bechdel-Wallace test, mm-hmm. that first appeared in Alison Bechdel, queer icon, queer cartoonist, Alison Bechdel's comic, Dykes to Watch Out For, originally intended just as sort of like a one-off joke. It was a bit, but it has since been used as this media metric. There are many versions of it. The one that we use is this. Two characters of a marginalized gender must have names. Those characters have to talk to each other about something other than a man. And we particularly enjoy it when it is a narratively meaningful conversation and not just a, hi, hot dog number one. Mm-hmm. Hello.
Yeah, also, I resent the aggressive gendering of the hot dog expanded universe. Oh my gosh. Hot dogs are, look, they're beautiful. They don't know gender. And this is, yeah. I mean it, Caitlin.
No.
I love these damn things.
I love to eat hot dogs.
When they're ethically produced, I'm smiling. And they don't know gender. They transcend gender and class. That's the whole point of a hot dog. They're for everybody.
But why, according to this movie,
is it Seth Rogen?
God, we'll talk about it.
White guys. Why are just, well, I have a lot of hot dog gendering thoughts, which we'll get around to.
Same.
But yes, this movie, I mean, for its many flaws, it does pass the Bechdel test. Not in ways I particularly like.
Oh, it's heinous.
But
yeah.
But that's why we talk about it all the time. It's a flawed metric. It was created as a bit.
Yes.
There's plenty to talk about. And boy, oh boy, this movie came out in 2016, mm-hmm. but it really feels like it came out in 2004.
Correct.
It has like huge 2004 vibes.
True.
But it was I kind of forgot, we were talking about this earlier, I forgot that Sausage Party was apparently a huge hit.
Yes, it was like a huge box office smash hit. It was, for a while, the highest grossing R-rated movie ever until...
That is really such a bummer.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I made some stuff up. It was the highest grossing R-rated animated film, not R-rated film in general, but R-rated animated film, because it grossed $141 million at the box office against a budget of $19 million, which is a low budget for an animated feature, and we'll go into how that happened later.
The budget on this movie is low for a animated, and then I have a lot of feelings on animation labor.
We'll get to that.
Animators are treated so horribly, and people across the spectrum in terms of jobs in animation are just treated terribly. And this mm-hmm. also feels like it ties into conversations that have gone on in the last couple of years around effects workers in Marvel movies, where that's constantly been like mm-hmm. people working overtime and then just being worked to death. And, you know, the whole ethos is like, you should yep. be lucky
yeah.
to work on a Marvel movie. And it's like, go fuck yourself.
Yes.
But yeah, Sausage Party, big hit. And I'm realizing, Caitlin, I appreciate that you were willing to do a hot dog themed movie to line up with.
Oh, of course. Yeah, this was my idea. Sorry.
Raw Dog, which Raw Dog out now. I will say, I thought this was the only movie about hot dogs,
mm-hmm.
but shows what I fucking know, because my friend Mitch last night gave me a DVD for something called Hot Dog the Movie.
Wild.
That came out in 1984. I haven't read the synopsis yet.
Okay.
I bet it's definitely,
can you share it
ages
now?
Well. Of course I can. Let me get the sticker off. Hold on. Okay, there's a booklet inside. I'm going to just read the beginning.
Good.
Snowballs and Powder Bunnies, the sextactic slapstick slalom of Hot Dog the Movie.
What?
Hot Dog the Movie.
I'm not even following.
Slalom? I think it's a skiing movie is also what's confusing.
Oh.
Is the whole thing appears to take place at a Let's find out. Hot Dog the Movie is the supreme Bacchanalian ski movie blowout toward which all previous Bacchanalian ski movie blowouts has led, and from which all subsequent Bacchanalian ski movie blowouts have since proceeded, backward, upside down, and drunkenly spinning through the air between snow-capped jumping off points. Hitting theaters in early 1984 at the ascending peak of post-Porky's teen sex comedy mania, Hot Dog's protagonists may not have been in high school or college, but the movie's ski lodge setting and R-rated raunch landed it squarely in the canon of high 80s adolescent anarchy farces. Let me just keep...
So this is like a biography of the movie more than a... synopsis. I'm realizing
this is a movie about skiing. Why is it called Hot Dog the Movie? Wait,
hang on,
I'm getting pissed off.
Let's Google it.
When do the hot dogs come in? It's about the film stars Patrick Hauser as Harkin Banks, a young and ambitious freestyle skier from Bonner's Ferry, Idaho, who's determined to prove himself in the freestyle skiing competition at Squaw Valley. Along the way, he teams with there's no hot dogs in this movie.
Yeah, it's a teen sex comedy about freestyle skiers.
Well, that has nothing to do with hot dogs, and I'm pissed. Yeah. Apparently, this movie made its budget back 11 times. Not that anyone's ever heard of it. Mm-mm. And hopefully that's what will happen to the movie we're discussing today as well. Sausage Party. Caitlin Durante, what's your history with this movie?
I did not see it in theaters, but I did see it shortly after it came out because there was a lot of buzz about this movie. Not only was it a box office hit, it was critically well received.
It has 82% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Which is unfathomable.
I remember being shocked by that at the time, too, because this was shortly before the Bechdel cast began.
Yes.
This came out the summer before.
Mm-hmm. So I saw it sometime later in 2016 and remember thinking, and this was before I was like you said, this was before we started the Bechdel cast. So even though representation was on my mind when I was watching movies, we didn't have quite the nuanced takes that we do now, but
you don't need nuanced view of cinema
to realize that I would say that this is one of the worst movies I've ever seen from a storytelling point of view and from a representation point of view. Like, it's just abysmal in every imaginable way.
It's interesting to read back the good reviews of this movie because there is sort of a lot of and I do think it has to do with how beloved Seth Rogen is by pop culture and by the general culture in general and general culture in general. Jamie, come on.
We're doing great.
We're not knocking Seth Rogen fans. I've enjoyed a lot of Seth Rogen over the years, although I did used to say I would deport him to Canada, which was not nice of me. I've enjoyed a lot of Seth Rogen's work.
Mm-hmm. Same.
This is just really not, I don't know. I felt a sort of in reading a lot of reviews, a lot of bending over backwards to make this movie okay because... Mm-hmm. Seth Rogen made it and all these beloved comedians of this era made it. And I do wonder how this movie would be received if it came out now. And also reading about the ostensible intentions that the writers had, where they were this is something that we'll get into, but it just never, ever, 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 ever works when someone's this movie is equal opportunity offensive. No one is safe from my pen. And it's just well, that completely ignores any dynamics of privilege or who gets to make most movies. So that does not work. And it's just I was reading in the reviews of this that, I don't know. The closest I could say to something positive about this movie is that it's attempting to say something about faith. I don't think it successfully does.
Correct.
I understand that it's attempting to.
Yeah.
But everything else is just presenting very broad stereotypes in a way that is not presenting I was not seeing the commentary that was implied in some of these reviews. I'm commenting on what exactly? What does Bill Hader playing a native character in the most broadly offensive way possible on multiple levels. What does that
What is that commenting on? Yeah, the critic consensus on Rotten Tomatoes is...
Which, again, Rotten Tomatoes is like a shitty metric.
Yeah.
But still.
But people consult it. Like, I go on Rotten Tomatoes to be like, should I see this movie? I don't know.
Sure.
But the critic consensus is Sausage Party is definitely offensive. I agree with that. But yes. Backs up its enthusiastic profanity with an impressively high laugh to gag ratio. I do not agree with that because I did not laugh fucking once.
No, it's all puns.
It's all bad. And I love a pun, but none of these puns are good.
I don't love a pun.
And then the final part of this is, so it's, you know, it backs up the enthusiastic profanity with an impressively high laugh to gag ratio and a surprisingly thought-provoking storyline. Also, no.
I went to Letterboxd on this one as well, just to get a...
Sure.
I love Letterboxd reviews a lot.
Oh, they're great.
The top review is, I'm only 4 minutes into this, but I think this is the most evil movie I've ever seen. And I hard agree with that. And this is why we need better movies about hot dogs. And I'm not even throwing my hat in the ring. I am the fucking ring. I'm going to make a hot dog movie that doesn't suck ass. This is... My history with this movie is that I saw it similar shortly after it came out. Mm-hmm. But I remember like seeing it with a friend that we were watching it. Again, we hadn't started the Bechdelcast, but it doesn't mean we weren't feminists or like didn't have a brain.
Right.
that like I saw it because I thought I would be like really upset and annoyed by it. Mm-hmm. And so we watched it kind of as like a joke.
Yeah.
And, you know, sure enough, I fucking hated it. I may have written about it at the time. This was back when I was doing a lot of like writing. I mean, I was like a full-time writer on various websites.
Wow, brag.
Thank you. But yeah, I'm pretty sure I wrote an essay about it for Paste at the time. Not about Sausage Party in particular, but like this like man-child comedy that I think has since... This is kind of like, as far as I can tell, at least in the hugely popular sense, kind of the tail end of it.
Yeah,
And it had a fucking run. I would say that this like style of broadly offensive humor that employs all of these fucking tropes that says it's saying something but it's not and it's pretty fucking evil it had a good like decade long kind of chokehold on comedy
for sure
in movies. And
yeah, it was like the Judd Apatow era.
Well, it's like, yeah, and it's like that's the thing that's fascinating, frustrating, whatever about it is like even Judd Apatow and Seth Rogen don't do shit like this anymore because I don't think that they could get away with it.
Yeah. And I know Seth Rogen not been like, oops, I made some stuff back in the day that I can't really vouch for anymore. Did that happen?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
He did. So yeah, I think it is kind of interesting that in the last 2 years, it appears this like started in 2021, Seth Rogen has attempted to sort of address past offensive both like content in movies and treatment of people,
yeah,
if not from him specifically, by a production that he was involved with or in charge of. So examples would include Emma Watson in This Is the End, Katherine Heigl in Knocked Up, and I'm also seeing an incident regarding a child actor in Good Boys, a movie I did not see,
having
their skin darkened.
Oh.
Yeah. So there was this sort of, I don't want to be too reductive and say apology tour, like, but a series of, like, this is such a, I don't know. In any case, my opinion is that Sausage Party is too recent to be doing, but it does feel like this, all that to say, Sausage Party feels like arriving at the tail end of this style of comedy being extremely mainstream popular.
Yeah, and it still has a long way to go, but there was kind of like a cultural turning point, like right around this time, where media and especially comedy wasn't so reliant on reductive stereotypes and tropes and punching down humor, which we've talked about many times on the show, that became way less popular right around this time.
Yes. And this, it's because the Bechdel cat. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, no, we fixed the world. You're welcome, everybody.
No, but I do think it like has, I mean, whatever, we're not historians or anthropologists, but this comes out, you know, the summer before the 2016 election, mm-hmm. which I feel like was a marked kind of a huge shift in demanding better representation
for sure
in movies. Was that successful? Still TBD, working on it.
Work in progress.
But I do take a little bit of comfort in watching this movie that was a hit in 2016 and feeling pretty confident that it probably couldn't even get
greenlit
right now. So that makes me feel a little better. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I saw this movie as a joke. I have not thought of it since, really. I mean, to the point where I literally wrote a book about hot dogs and didn't even think to include it.
Right. Yeah, it has no lasting legacy, which is comforting.
No. And I think especially because of the style of humor being so broad and I think evil, as well as the labor issues that sort of stuck to this movie for several years. I know that there's been interest in a sequel from Seth Rogen, but I just personally, I don't see it happening. However, mm-hmm. Caitlin, in October 2022, Sausage Party Foodtopia, a sequel series based on the film, was greenlit from Amazon Studios.
What?
So,
ew.
Well, you know, look at God, which is what this movie says it's about, but it's not.
Yeah.
Should we get into it? This movie really is viscerally upsetting. And it's, there's so many, like, I mean, this is true of a lot of, there's like a lot of performers I genuinely enjoy in this movie. And
there
I'm just
like,
there's
so many people that are too good for the, why is Selma Hayek in this?
Oh God. I mean, we'll get into, I mean, I at very least hope that people were, well, some, I don't know. I'm so like, I don't know. Yeah. Why did they, I just feel deflated.
Same. Well, let's take a quick break and regroup.
Yes.
And then we'll come back for a recap that will just upset us again.
Great.
So we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, we are going to give women meaningful beauty. And I said, that's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life.
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ+ bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
And we're back.
We're back.
All right.
Can I just quickly read off the cast for this movie?
Please.
Okay. It really is all... Okay. Seth Rogen, Michael Cera, Kristen Wiig, Edward Norton, David Krumholtz, huge betrayal, Salma Hayek, Bill Hader, I think comes out the worst out of the whole cast, and that's saying something.
Yep.
Craig Robinson, Nick Kroll, James Franco,
Boo.
Jonah Hill, Anders Holm, Danny McBride, how dare he, Paul Rudd. It's just, come on. Come on.
Yeah.
All of you. All of you.
Shame.
Shame.
Shame on you.
Except for, I would say, Salma Hayek. Yeah. Everyone else, shame on you.
Yeah, but also, her character... We'll get there. Okay.
I don't know. Right, I don't know. I hope they paid her a lot of money, but also, oh my God.
They probably didn't.
What? they probably didn't. Why would you do this? How? I can't imagine outside of money. You know, I just don't know. I just don't know. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about this the other day when I was watching a video of Bill Nighy.
Oh, king.
Who describes walking around the set of Pirates of the Caribbean when he was playing Davy Jones, just saying, the money, the money, the money. And it's like, I hope.
Oh, wow.
Oh, he's the best.
Love him. Okay.
Okay, sausage party.
So most of the movie takes place at a grocery store called Shopwell's. Mm. We meet a few hot dogs in a pack. Frank, voiced by Seth Rogen.
Get it?
As well as...
He's a hot dog.
Ha ha.
His name's Frank.
Hilarious.
I'm laughing already. Wait, but do the buns have tits? This is so upsetting. Gender essentialism with hot dogs. Like, oh, that's nasty.
There's a whole spiel I have.
That's fucking filthy.
Another hot dog is Carl, voiced by Jonah Hill, and Barry, voiced by Michael Cera. These hot dogs, along with all of the other food and condiments and household products in this grocery store, are sentient. And their goal is to be selected by people who the food thinks are gods.
Okay, so quick I'm going to try my best to enjoy this episode more by interjecting with hot dog facts I love.
Oh, please.
That you can
are you about
learn
to tell
about
me that hot dogs are
out now.
Sentient?
Yes. No. I will say that there is not that I think that anyone who was writing this movie was thinking a thought the entire time.
Correct.
But there is a weird precedent for like picturing like hot dogs specifically, but also a lot of food, of just like anthropomorphizing food in a way that is like begging you to eat it in a way that's kind of nasty. Mm-hmm. And there's one particular hot dog statue that is, I've seen it across the country.
Okay.
This was not an international project, so I can only speak to the US. So if you're a listener outside of the US that has seen this hot dog statue, please let me know.
Okay.
It's so gross. It's first of all, it's huge. It's like 6 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of is anthropomorphized in the Mickey Mouse way that that these hot dogs are. They got the white gloves. They got the little legs.
Yeah.
Whatever. You got to make them look like something. And I feel like the Mickey Mouse method is most common.
Uh-huh.
But this hot dog is slouching over. He's holding, I say he because it seems like that's what, again, the gender essentialism of hot dogs.
People love to gender hot dogs as men, and more specifically
horny men,
penises.
Ugh. Okay, whatever. But the hot dog is slouched over. He's also got teeth.
Ooh,
hate that.
Yeah.
I mean, so does Frank.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, what? It like you could have a whole thing that there's this amazing video from this YouTuber named Mike's Mike where he breaks down everything about the movie Cars that is like body horror.
Uh-huh.
And you could have a very similar video about this, but the hot dog statue's holding ketchup in one hand, mustard in the other, mm-hmm. squeezing it all over on himself,
oh.
and licking his teeth.
Ew.
Like he's dressing himself to be eaten by you, but he also looks like he's kind of in pain.
Oh no.
It's disgusting. And it's so big. And then I looked it up online. It costs like $1,200. I'm like, why would you buy this?
Yuck.
Why would this be in your house?
Oh, so this is...
They wanted to put that on the cover of my book. And I was like,
no,
you can't. You can't do that. You can't do that. I'm going to send you a picture.
Please.
It's so nasty.
So this is like just a piece of like decorative art ? That you can buy and have in your house?
No. So it's used mostly, I mean, I guess you could, but it's used mostly in hot dog restaurants.
Oh, I see.
But true. I mean, this thing is being sold for $2,000 on eBay and it's disgusting.
Ugh.
It's so gross. And then in Chicago, what is more common practice is they will break off the arm holding the ketchup bottle.
Uh-huh. Oh, because Chicago hot dogs are all about mustard.
They're all about a lot of things, but they're more about like no ketchup.
I see. Okay.
Are you seeing this?
Oh my God.
It's
Thank
you.
It's even worse than I was picturing in my head. The face is really troubling.
It's perverse. Ugh. Also, he's like wearing sneakers and socks and has teeth. And I'm just like, this is too far.
Is it, wait, I'm the one I'm seeing, he's like licking his lips.
Yes.
So he has a tongue.
Yes. Ugh. I've seen variants that have teeth. There's a few different variants on this, but, and then there's also one that's wrapped in an American flag because this is so, you know, the hot dog is so tied into American jingoism, even though it's not an American dish. It's fucking Greek and Polish, but whatever. All right. Sorry. Sausage party.
So yeah, we meet all these hot dogs. Also, these hot dogs are not being refrigerated. They're just on a regular ass shelf.
Nasty.
Next to buns.
I would rather they refrigerate the buns. That's fine.
Yeah, right.
You can do that.
You can, yeah. They last longer, probably.
Sheesh.
But yeah, no, there's just like room temperature hot dogs and we're supposed to be rooting for them. Yeah, right. Okay, so the whole thing is that all the food reveres humans as gods and they want to be taken out of the store to the quote unquote great beyond because the food does not know that its purpose is to be eaten. They think that they're going to be taken out of the store and it's going to be this wonderful paradise because the movie is an allegory for religion and the food believes this dogma about the great beyond basically being heaven, all this stuff.
Yes, this is like the beginning of this movie's attempt to make comment on faith that I feel was not
very well done.
But you can tell they're attempting it.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
So the main thing with the hot dogs, who again are coded as men, and we'll talk all about the coding and the gender essentialism of all of this, but the hot dogs who are men are excited. The main thing that they're excited about is that they will be put inside the hot dog buns, who are coded as women. And
also coded as sentient vaginas.
Right. Here's what happens is that the
This is complicated stuff.
The hot dogs being put inside hot dog buns is this very nuanced, subtle metaphor for heterosex. You probably didn't know that until I explained it because it's just so subtle.
Really subtle. And it's like it's really hetero, and it's also very everything in this on this shelf is cis hetero. I'm like,
correct,
they're fucking hot dogs. stop it
they're,
what the sentient. And I will say that the design, I mean, whatever, animation wise the character design of the hot dogs, I'm not super upset. I don't love to see teeth inside of a hot dog, but I guess it's scarier if there's no teeth, if we're anthropomorphic, whatever.
Right.
The buns, inexcusable,
bad.
They're all, because I feel like there's all of these jokes that have ableist coding to them, of like a smooshed bun or like a hot dog that isn't like the correct quote unquote shape or size or whatever, which is not just ableist coded, very, very clearly.
Right.
It's also like, but the regular buns don't look like hot dog buns because regular hot dog buns don't have
titties
and a big old butt. Like, what are you talking?
And like,
the hot dog buns are not like famously curvy. Like, what are you talking about?
Nor,
and I hate their sideways mouth. The vertical mouth.
Oh my God.
Why would you do that? They don't have, that's, so, okay. Why does Seth Rogen hot dog have teeth? Kristen Wiig bun, no teeth. Sideways mouth, no teeth.
The character design in this movie is just, I hate it.
Yeah, the vagina buns, I have really, it's so hard to look at.
Yeah.
It's so, and you're just like, but vaginas are literally beautiful.
Wow.
Why would you do that? And also, it's like, I don't, like, it's just all like, the fact that, I mean, we've talked about this in animation before, where anything remotely woman-coded, and like we've been talking about this since the Ghostbusters episode, where it's like male-coded animated characters can look like anything. Women have to have a fucking huge, like, have to have, like, distinct boobs and butt, which is obviously, yeah, like, not knocking anyone who has boobs and butt, like, whatever.
Yeah, how
but
dare it's you?
So
I have
essential.
Boobs and a butt. What are you saying, Jamie?
I have a butt. I technically have boobs. It's fine. Like, it's fine. It's bodies. But, like, you know, we can't look like anything.
Right. It's a very specific, like, Western beauty standards body shape and size that is ascribed to female characters in animation.
But, Caitlin, why?
Why? For a hot dog bun.
The hot dog is... Well, the hot dog... But even by this movie's logic, the hot dog is clearly supposed to be penis coated.
Right.
It's a sentient dick and it's horny because that's how we essentialize male sexuality.
Right.
The bun is vagina, but vaginas
don't have
boobs. It's kind of, if that would mean you were so sick, if that was happening, I just don't know. Like, I just don't.
Like, yeah.
Vaginas don't have But
they don't have an ass.
They don't.
They don't have titties.
Not to be a woman in STEM, but they don't. But it's like, it's so perverse to me that, like, even just making the character a sentient vagina was not horny enough. They also had to give the vagina,
yeah,
boobs and a butt. It doesn't make sense.
No.
And it looks horrible.
It looks like shit.
It's so gross. Not knocking the animators. I'm sure that the creatives insisted on this.
Yeah, the animators aren't designing the characters.
No.
So whoever was responsible for character design really needs to
this movie is, like, truly chaotic evil
on every level.
And these things are sort of, like, occurring to me as we go. I'm like, wow, they really put boobs and a butt on a vagina.
Yes, that is correct.
We're never going to be
any
free. This is just, like, a nightmare.
Yeah. Okay. So the main bun character who we meet and follow throughout the movie is Brenda, voiced by Kristen Wiig. She is Frank's girlfriend.
I love Kristen Wiig.
Same. And the following day is the 4th of July, which means that it's pretty likely that the hot dogs and buns will be taken out of the store to the great beyond, and Frank and Brenda will finally get to have sex.
Yeah.
Sure enough, Frank's pack of hot dogs and Brenda's pack of buns are selected from the shelf and put into a cart by one of the quote-unquote gods, aka a woman.
But before this happens, they have some sort of sexual contact. They've touched tips.
Yeah.
Which is later used. And I saw reviews of this movie that were like, this is the commentary on Christian values. And you're like, shut up. They're like, they touch tips.
They touch fingertips, right?
But it's like a sexually coded, like,
yeah,
whatever, touch tips. Fine. Mm-hmm. Which is then used for the rest when things go wrong in the movie as time goes on. Brenda thinks that this is because she had any sort of premarital or, like, pre-whatever.
Yeah, she thinks she's being punished by the gods for having premarital sexual contact with Frank.
Which I guess you could argue comes around in the end, but not in a very satisfying way. Mm-mm. And it and also just, like, the way that they're... And again, I know that this was argued as commentary, but it didn't work for me. Where at the beginning, the hot dogs are just like, we want to fucking fuck. And then the bun ladies are like, we want to be loved.
Yeah, we want to love. I wrote it down. It's, we want to love and hug and feel and share.
Me vibes.
Because women be having emotions and men only want to have sex. Ha ha ha.
I mean, I want to love and feel and share too, but people of all genders want to love and feel and share.
Yeah.
And also people of all genders want to fuck. This movie is so essentialist. It's so boring. Yeah. I hate it.
It sucks.
Sorry.
Okay, so Frank and Brenda have been put in a cart.
Yeah.
But there's this jar of honey mustard that had been purchased by mistake and gets returned to the store. So he went out into the quote-unquote great beyond, or the, like, unknown area beyond the store.
Danny McBride, how could you?
And then the honey mustard ends up in this woman's cart with Frank and Brenda, and the honey mustard tells everyone what he has discovered about what actually happens in the great beyond. It is a hellscape where food is eaten. So chaos ensues upon hearing this news, and a bunch of food goes flying out of the cart, including Frank and Brenda, because they've gotten loose from their packaging. The store closes shortly thereafter, and Frank and Brenda, who are now just sort of like loose in the store, they set off to find other packages that they can sneak into in the hopes that they will still be chosen and taken to the great beyond. Although Frank is now skeptical and wants more information, because what if the honey mustard was right?
And the honey mustard tells him to go see
a bottle of fire water.
Yes. And also, we haven't brought up, because I don't know why this, like, truly writing wise, we're just looking at this as writers, I don't know why the character of Douche. That's right.
Oh, yeah.
The big bad of this movie is called Douche. I don't know why there's like randomly a villain. Like, there, it's not even necessary to the shitty story that's being told for there to be this villain.
Right.
Like, the crisis of faith and the quest is enough. You don't need. The villain of the movie is named Douche. And you're never gonna
he's about to come up,
which I'm like, do they even sell those at the grocery store?
I don't know, but also it's such a clear indication that this movie was written by men, and all the major creative decision makers of this movie were men, because, like, and not to make sweeping generalizations here, but I have never known a person who has a vagina to ever use a douche in my entire life. And maybe that's just something that people tend to keep private, but also, like, me and my friends talk about this stuff all the time, and like, you learn at an early age, if you have a vagina, that douching is not good for you. It's like, it can cause yeast infections, and like,
my mom taught me that.
Yeah, like, that's something you learn early on, and it's like advised that you don't do it. And so no one I know with a vagina has ever used a douche, but the guys who wrote this movie were like, oh, what's a product that a woman would buy? A douche.
I do have some information on this from womenshealth.gov about douching. So douching is not necessarily uncommon. I will agree with you. I've never used one, and I don't know anyone who has, because my mom told me when I was young that it is, like you're saying, like, okay, here's some information on douching.
Yes.
So everyone knows. This is from the government. Can we trust them? Douching is washing or cleaning out the vagina with water or other mixtures of fluids. Ugh. In the United States, almost 1 in 5 women 15 to 44 years old, again, the definition of a woman being very narrow there, because it's the fucking government. But almost 1 in 5 15 to 44 years old douche. Doctors recommend that you do not douche. Douching can lead to many health problems, including problems getting pregnant. Douching is also linked to vaginal infections and sexually transmitted infections. So... and I maybe it's a generational thing where it's like, maybe just people in our generation sort of learned that it was not healthy. But again, it's like Seth Rogen is like 10 years old. Like, it's just it is like a lazy, and the way that the character, it's so clear why they name that, because douche is also like shorthand for an asshole.
Right.
Which is, you know, it happens all the time where anything vaguely feminine, like, why is it like, Michael Cera says this at one point, because he's in this movie, where it's like, you know, if you're anything like feminine coded, there's like a strong meaning to it. That's why I'm very pro asshole. It always works.
As an insult, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, same.
It's a great equalizer.
I've replaced almost everything with like asshole or shithead or something just like very neutral.
Because poo-poo, and that's why we're so sophisticated. But there's like Michael Cera's character refers to himself as a pussy at one point, which is a classic example of like, you know, a vagina being weak. You're just like, sure. But the same with like douche equals bad because reasons. And the Nick Kroll character is like a gym bro who I think, like, you know, would have douche attributed to him, basically.
Right.
But it's just like, I mean, not that the rest of this movie, I thought that that was like, especially not just like more lazy, like whatever, but also just like weird writing. Cause I don't think this movie even needs a
villain. I don't get it.
Right. Also, I did not even know what that was supposed to be until the douche identifies himself as a douche, because I thought, like, douches aren't packaged that way. So I was like, is that like a toilet brush in its like toilet brush container? That's what I thought it was at first, because like like, I don't think their douches are packaged that way, even. It's in like a Summer's Eve box and it's discreet. Anyway, so I'm about to introduce the douche character. But before that, Brenda and Frank, who again are just like loose and roaming through the store, team up with a few other items that also flew out of the cart. A lavash named Kareem Abdul Lavash, voiced by David Krumholtz, a.k.a. Bernard the Elf from The Santa Claus.
Another massive betrayal.
Huge.
And this is, again, I'm like, I didn't find any information on why this choice was made. I don't know if you did. But the fact that, like, David Krumholtz is playing a character who is definitely coded as being Middle Eastern and Muslim, which David Krumholtz is not.
Correct.
But David Krumholtz is a Jewish man.
But the Jewish character
is by Edward Norton,
aka Sammy Bagel Jr., who is a bagel.
But Edward Norton's not Jewish.
Voiced by Edward Norton, like doing a Woody Allen impression the whole time. And if you're wondering if heinous stereotypes are employed here,
oh, just assume for both any characters, yeah,
yeah. It's,
I mean, it's truly, from what I can tell, is that the hot dogs are kind of coded as
Protestant
Christian white guys.
Yeah.
And the buns are presented as Christian white girls. Mm-hmm. And then everyone else in the movie is, I guess with the exception of douche, is like pretty heavily stereotyped, like a heavily stereotyped culture.
Right. So, yeah, basically, I mean, and we'll get to this in more detail, but the movie codes most of the food in particular ways, often ascribing a particular race, ethnicity, and or religion to several different food items. And with that comes this, just a whole slew of reductive and harmful portrayals of marginalized communities. So that's what we're working with.
Yes. I mean, that is most of what the movie relies on. And we, yeah, again, it's like, Kayla and I discussed this before we started recording, where it's like, we will make note of like where these characters appear, but I don't even like, we don't even really want to harp on how deeply offensive, because it's like,
because to describe the ways in which the offensive things are happening is just like upsetting to do. And I don't even want to like repeat it. So
it's a waste of air, but it is worth mentioning what is being done, because this was a successful movie fairly recently. Mm-hmm. It's such a bummer.
Yeah. Okay, so they team up with these couple other characters, and then meanwhile, a douche voiced by Nick Kroll becomes a villain because he wants revenge against Frank and Brenda for getting him thrown away and damaged after that cart disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So now there's this random villain. Frank, Brenda, and the others make their way through the store. They pass through the liquor aisle because Frank wants to talk to this bottle of fire water, who is an indigenous coded character voiced by Bill Hader, yikes, who seems to know things about the great beyond and how it might not be all that it's cracked up to be.
Yes.
And Firewater tells Frank that he and a few other non-perishable items in the store,
who, don't worry, are also all wildly stereotyped.
For sure. They invented the idea of the great beyond in order to keep the food happy and unaware of their impending doom. However, they note that it's been distorted along the way. But if Frank wants proof of this, he should go to the dark aisle beyond the ice.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Brenda and the others get tricked by a bottle of tequila, who is trying to lead them to the douche, but a hard taco shell, Teresa Del Taco, voiced by Salma Hayek, saves them. The douche is trying to like attack them, but Brenda and the others get away.
Okay.
then
this movie is so evil.
It's
this
movie is horrid.
So evil. There was a really good I thought piece in Salon by Nico Lang when this movie first came out that unpacked in particular how infuriating it is that Salma Hayek's character is written the way she is. Not mm-hmm. only because it's because it's like racism and cultural stereotypes on top of sexism, like it's just like mm-hmm. a two punch. And Salma Hayek has been so historically outspoken about how frustrating it is to be a Latin actor and mm-hmm. be treated like this repeatedly. I mean, Salma Hayek, a Oscar nominated actor for playing Frida, mm-hmm. that has to take parts like this. And so I just wanted to share a quick quote from Salma Hayek,
yeah.
because I love Salma Hayek and I just really, she says, "I had things said to me that you would not believe. A studio executive once informed Hayek that she would be a much bigger star had she been born in the United States. He allegedly told her, 'The moment you open your mouth, you remind everyone of their maid.'" And there was another time, I mean, it's, and she's been, again, she's been very outspoken about this over the years and still mm-hmm. has to take fucking parts like this, which I think is a systemic failure.
For sure.
Another example she gave over the years was when she was almost in, and it wasn't specific about what movie, but she was almost the lead in a sci-fi film that was being directed by a white guy. Mm-hmm. But then the executives overruled her casting and forced the director to drop Salma Hayek because they said, "A Mexican in space." Then another movie that like isn't even good. That you remember that movie Grown Ups? It's like an Adam Sandler movie.
I didn't see it either, but yeah, I know of it.
It's very an Adam Sandler movie, but Salma Hayek, I guess, plays his wife in that movie, and he had to fight for her to get that part. Like, it's just like she's Oscar nominated. Like, it's she's unbelievably talented. Like, there's no whatever. You don't need us to tell you Salma Hayek is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
But like, the way she's treated in particular, where I'm just like, this is just fucking unacceptable. And also Salma Hayek is a good like comedic actor too, like but they're just like I hate it and right. She's one of the few actors who is cast as like her own race, where there's mm-hmm. many where that is not the case
because it's mostly white actors voicing non-white coded characters,
I think, with the exception of Craig Robinson and Salma Hayek. Mm-hmm. That is the case.
Right.
Bill Hader as Firewater is, it felt like it was pulling from like the animated Peter Pan from the 1950s portrayal of Indigenous Americans.
For sure.
Voiced by a white guy.
Bill Hader also voices Tequila and El Guaco.
Yes.
Which are Mexican coded characters.
Yeah. And also coded as being predatory.
Yeah.
And in addition to, and this is also pointed out in Nico Lang's article that we will link, is casting the only Indigenous coded character as Firewater
as a bottle of liquor.
Yeah, it's like, I think, pretty clearly mocking alcoholism in Indigenous communities, is a topic we've discussed in other episodes. Mm-hmm. And like, it's just cruel. Like, it's just it truly blows my mind that any of this was argued as commentary. Like, that is, you're just doing the thing.
It's such punching down humor dialed up
in a way that is like worse than the 1950s, like the what they're, it's a lot. I mean, yeah, it just really
All right, so back to the movie. We then cut to the other hot dogs who remained in the package and went home with that like woman shopper. And at the woman's house, Barry watches in horror as food is peeled and chopped up and boiled and melted and eaten. Carl is sliced in half, but Barry survives and escapes. Back in the store, Brenda and the others link back up with Frank, but none of them want to go with him to the Dark Isle because they still believe in the Great Beyond. So Frank has to head to the Dark Isle alone. Back outside of the store, Barry the hot dog manages to stow away in some dude's car. He thinks he's headed back to Shopwell's, but they end up at this guy's apartment where this guy proceeds to do bath salts.
I think this is the James Franco character.
Yes.
And also this movie is already so dated where it's like, I don't know, like bath salts no longer really a subject of discussion.
Right. It really puts this movie in a particular time in history.
The two, outside of just being straight up offensive, the two things that felt the most dated to me were the references to bath salts and also like the gym bro humor, which is, I think it was just like done to death and people are fucking tired of it and know it, like, because that's everything that comes out of douche's mouth is like, don't fucking love it, bro. And you're like, right. Oh my God. I don't know
if that's just because I'm swiping left on hundreds of men who seem to fit this description on Bumble and shit like that, but I feel like that caricature of a man is still very much a thing. That didn't even feel that dated to me. So
damn.
IDK. Yeah. Hello. Yeah. It's worse than we feared. Anyway. Because this dude is on bath salts, he and Barry can understand each other because the drugs enable him to like see if this fourth dimension where he can see the sentient food. And so they talk and the guy promises to return Barry to the grocery store. Back at the store, Brenda, Sammy, and Ravash finally make it to their respective aisles and part ways. Meanwhile, Frank reaches the dark aisle, which is full of knives and cookware and a cookbook that shows all of these recipes for preparing food, which is proof that people eat food and that the great beyond is a myth.
Woo.
But when Frank shows this to all the other food in the store over a like video monitor and loudspeaker, he's like, here's the truth. And if you don't believe it, you're a fool. And the food feels insulted. And they're like, this sounds like another theory. And I choose to believe the more pleasant thing. So none of the other food gets on board with him.
Right. Which is another sort of like, I don't know, I guess if you're listening, you feel however you want it. But I was like, this is like sort of another like swipe that is at all religions so broadly as mm-hmm. to mean nothing. And also in kind of a way that feels very, like 2016 was a little too late to still be attempting this, but like suggesting like atheism is the only method, the only way to mm-hmm. like to freedom of your mind, which just feels a little
right.
What's his name? Bill. Who's the guy?
Mm.
Oh my God. Bill fucking, the guy on TV, Caitlin,
Bill,
he's
Bill
annoying.
Nye, the science guy?
No, I don't, I think he's respectful of other people's religions, I hope. No, I'm thinking of Bill, not Bill Nye, that's what comes
Bill
up in
Nye,
my Google,
because
I Google him all the time. He's on HBO, Bill Maher.
Bill Maher.
Oh my God.
Bill Maher.
Maher, who's just like a kind of like fucking asshole who's
yeah.
like who has contempt for anyone that has any sort of faith. That's
he
not to
sucks.
Say that faith, that religion cannot be extremely repressive, obviously we know that, but it's like
right.
it just feels like this, again, just a very overly simplistic like, well,
for sure.
if you didn't believe in anything, maybe your life wouldn't suck so much. You're like, well, that feels a little broad to me.
Definitely. Yes.
Yes.
This film, it's almost as if this film lacks nuance.
I know. I'm just like, oh, we're wasting our time. Like,
yeah, what are we even doing? Buy Jamie's book. Bye. See ya.
Please buy my book. Please buy my book. It's nothing like this. Oh my God.
No, there's lots more to discuss. And the movie's almost over. So
yes.
Barry shows up after Frank has tried to give this speech about what everyone should believe or should not believe. And Barry's like, no, you can't tell people that they're fools if they don't believe you. We have to do it a different way. So then they shoot all of the people in the store with toothpicks covered in bath salts, and because bath salts allow the people and food to understand each other, the people.
What is, like, is the bath salts like a metaphor for like empathy? Like, just,
I don't think they thought about it that hard. I don't know.
You're right.
But because the people are on bath salts, they start freaking out and destroying the food, which allows the food to see how evil and vicious the humans are that they thought were gods, but they realize are actually monsters. And they realize that Frank was right. So the food fights back against the people. But this is when the douche shows back up and puts himself up a store employee's butt and is like puppeting the store employee around while he's holding a gun and trying to shoot the food. But
dude, I was so checked out by this point. I was like, sure.
I was watching it at like 2x speed by this point, and I feel like I missed some stuff because I was like, I just need this to end as quickly as possible.
I watched it twice to prepare, but yeah, the second time I watched it on 1.75 because I'm just like, this, it doesn't make a difference. It's not like I'm ignoring something. Like, right. There's nothing to take.
No. Anyway, okay, so the villains are trying to kill the food, but Frank and Brenda and Barry defeat the bad guys and they save the food in the store. And then the movie ends with an orgy where all the food is having sex with each other. And then there's another final beat where the bottle of fire water is like, by the way, none of us are real. We're a cartoon invented by Seth Rogen. So it tries to have this like clever meta ending, but it also falls completely flat and sucks. The end.
And it's also weird that the only, they're like, which is like a very easy way to be like, yeah, it was about nothing.
Right.
It was about nothing. Because it was like, even with the ending, again, just like shitty writing, where like the ending being like, oh, now everyone's like having this big food orgy and it's like not the rigid hetero like thing, but it's still like anytime there's queer sex, it's heavily commented on. And then they even make Brenda Bunsen, feminist icon, you know, sit next to Frank the hot dog after and say like, well, some like basically say that the queer sexual experiences were okay, but the best sex was with Frank the cis hot dog. The, like, I just like, oh, hot dog. Did you pick that up on that though? Where it, like, we do get it like, again, this is a victory for nobody because again, with Salma Hayek playing a taco, that is, yeah, both racist and sexist. Vaginas have certainly been referred to as tacos. Mm-hmm. And it's all like, you don't need me to explain this to you. You've lived
I've been
world,
alive in the world.
Unfortunately. But like, but at the end, they do have, okay, let's start there. Let's start there.
Yeah. Is, well, let's take a quick break first and then.
Oh, God.
All right, we'll be right back.
Please buy raw dog.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ+ bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, You can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Okay, and we're back.
And we're back. Seth Rogen says raw dog, and I was this is bad press.
That's blasphemy.
We've reclaimed raw dog. We've taken it away from him. It's not Frank the Hot Dog anymore. But let's start with the story between Brenda and what is Salma Hayek's character's name?
Teresa. And just to contextualize this a bit more before we dive in, which we've already mostly done, but just to make it clear that the hot dogs are all coded as men, and more specifically penises, because there's all these jokes and even a whole storyline about how Barry the hot dog feels insecure because he's not as long as the other hot dogs, but he is girthy and all this stuff. And then the hot dog buns are coded as women / vaginas. But again, the vagina buns also have boobs. Point is, it's very gender essentialist and reductive, and it's basically just saying,
Brenda Bunsen says, "I'm so tight." it's just
right. All of these attempts at jokes of how ha 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 bun equals vagina, hot dog equals penis, which is the easiest and most unoriginal joke in the world, and yet the whole movie hinges on this very lazy, obvious joke, as if it's some brilliant bit of comedy that no one's ever thought of before.
And then on top of that, penis equals man. Always man.
Yes.
Vagina equals always one. It's very cis normative as well. And it's
right. So not only is it reducing people to their genitals in a way that means, men have dicks, and because of that, they're so fucking horny and all they want to do is fuck all the time, and reduces women to vaginas, and also they have feelings because they have vaginas, and it's very transphobic, and reducing people to genitals and saying that only, to be a man means you have this genitalia, to be a woman means you have this genitalia. There's no room for anyone on the gender or intersex spectrum. It's just so rigid and binary.
And unfortunately, it's really difficult to discuss this movie without that constantly being the case. So we apologize if we sound it's really hard to talk about this movie without feeling you're aligning with that. Obviously that is not how we align, but this is just the interior logic of the movie is so fucked and assumes so much that it's very difficult to have this conversation.
Yes,
please buy raw dog. But okay, so we have Teresa Del Taco.
Yes.
Okay, Del Taco is, if you live in the U.S., you probably know, an American fast food
chain.
American, but it's Americanized Mexican food. So already, lazy. But Teresa is, she's a queer character who is immediately interested in Brenda. Mm-hmm. And it's implied that that's why Teresa helps the gang, is because she has a thing for Brenda. We see a lot of very again, you're what are we doing here? From Teresa's perspective, we see her constantly looking at Brenda's butt, objectifying her. I feel like this movie, and then there is a scene where, again, it's just Brenda is, I think, a queer character, because she says when she and Teresa go their separate ways, basically says I'm interested,
but this religion we believe in,
it would be against God,
right,
to have, which I think is again the attempt that this movie is making to be religion is so oppressive. And then at the end it comes around and everyone has a big orgy, and Teresa and Brenda do have sex, or it's implied that everyone kind of has sex with everyone. But I do think, and the way that queerness is treated in this movie is obviously bad.
Oh, for sure.
Okay, all to the point where there's a broad stereotype that isn't even current. I'm how old are you people? Where they're but
The entire fruit section of the grocery store is queer coded, and mostly queer coded as men.
Yeah, gay men.
And yeah, so just again, because this movie is so gender essentialist, there is no real in between in terms of the gender spectrum. And we see queer men, even though it's, I feel like this was a time where it was like, well, any representation, you should be thrilled that we included this.
I'm acknowledging you exist, and that's good enough.
Where there's already, I mean, it's so unshocking that they were working on this movie since 2008, because this feels more 2008 than 2016.
For sure.
But that was when it was released, so, you know, fuck you. But there's a fair amount of no homoing between hot dogs.
So much.
But then when there are queer men, they're treated differently from queer women, which I know, again, is essentialist. But it's something we've talked about before, where when there are queer women, it's very like, ooh, this is sexy. This is leering. This is blah, blah, blah. And then when it's queer men, it's like funny.
Right.
And like, it's, I don't even really know what word to describe how, because at the end, Sammy Bagel Jr. and Kareem Abdul Lavash.
Hilarious, by the way.
Have sex. The bagel says he has a boner. I'm like, well, I understand why you haven't attempted to show it, because what does that even mean? What does that mean?
What would that look like? Yeah.
Doesn't make sense. But those characters are so offensive. And like, okay. So anyways, I thought it was interesting that Brenda and Teresa are like acknowledged to be queer by the plot. But like, it's just so, everything is so halfway, because even like their interest in each other is still treated in a clearly written by straight men perspective.
Lazy, mostly played as a joke, nothing interesting or meaningful being done with it. Which is also what happens with and again, we touched on this, and it's not worth going into the details, the specific examples, because they're so upsetting, but just the racism, xenophobia, anti-Islam, anti-Semitic also, like, and it's so,
well, that, and yeah, that's the one that we talked about this a little bit as well, where that's, I think, the one, I'm curious what our Jewish listeners think, but there, like, that feels like the only subject on which this group of writers has any leeway on, because the story and the original like concept of this movie is by Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg, and Jonah Hill, who are all Jewish writers. And, you know, I still think this movie sucks no matter what, but I do want to acknowledge that there is a pretty well-storied history of Jewish writers poking at tropes surrounding Jewish characters and also surrounding Nazism, which this movie also does. There is precedent for that. It's obviously done way better by artists like Mel Brooks, and like that's the only where I don't know where to land on that, because I'm not Jewish and I don't want to. I mean,
we talked about this on the Borat episode as well.
Yes
On the is that a Matreon episode? Gosh, I've lost all track of what is where.
Yes, I think that was when we covered Borat
2
on the Matreon, where it is
iconically,
like,
we did that
feminist masterpiece, meant it was said. But in any case, I don't want to, you know, come down on the side of like Jewish writers cannot make any commentary on Jewish history in the form of a comedy. There's plenty of it. I just personally don't think anything is well done in this movie, but that's the one thing that I'm like, well, I don't really feel qualified to have a take on that.
I feel the same.
However, we would be curious to know what our Jewish listeners think. I mean, it's just like, I just can't believe anyone liked this movie. It's so confusing to me. I wanted to quote a Lindy West piece. This is also mentioned in this Nico Lang piece. You gotta love Lindy West. She said this back in 2012, where basically in the press tour for this movie, as we've alluded to, the writers would say, like, oh, this is equal opportunity, like, offensiveness. Like, mm-hmm. we know that it's broad stereotypes, like, but it's with everyone. I think that that, and that's sort of where they're poking at Jewish stereotypes come in, where they're like, we're doing it to ourselves too. So right. it's cool if we do it to everybody. Mm-hmm. So that is sort of the acknowledged ethos of how this movie was put together. It's like, we're not exempt, so you're not exempt. Mm-hmm. So this is from a Lindy West essay for Jezebel in 2012. She says, quote, the problem is that all people are not equal in positions of power, mm-hmm. which is true, because it's like, these guys are making the movie. Like, there, mm-hmm. there is one listed producer who is a woman, Megan Ellison, who is, if I were to guess, is probably involved mostly in the animated portion, because she works at Annapurna, where the animation took place, which we'll get to in a second. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like there were any women that had any say in, you know, how this was made, nor were there any Muslim writers, nor were there any Mexican writers, nor were there indigenous writers, nor were there black writers, mm-hmm. and on and on and on and on and on. It was just these guys. Mm-hmm. So that logic does not, it doesn't hold up. It doesn't work.
And if they were actually like poking fun at everyone, because these filmmakers are only poking fun at already marginalized people and not like commenting on fucking billionaires and racists and like people who should actually be,
which is like
criticized for their behavior.
And not that that's the duty of any, like, of all movies.
Sure.
Like, you can have movies that are not, like, you know, explicitly anti-capitalist and all this stuff. And this movie is trying to say something about religion, but it's just, yeah, like, as far as the stereotypes are deployed, it seems like just for shock value. Like,
definitely.
It has nothing to really do with the larger plot, which is, like, basically incoherent to me. It's just, like, it's mean and it's lazy and it's a bit evil.
Definitely.
And I read an example that so Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen also said that they consulted friends to make sure their equal opportunity offensiveness wasn't just plain offensive. Gerard Carmichael, who is not in this movie, but he's in mm-hmm. Neighbors, another Seth Rogen joint of this era.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Gerard Carmichael told BuzzFeed that Goldberg would come to him to vet the movie's more problematic content. Is this racist? Goldberg inquired on more than one occasion. And then Nico Lang says, in an industry where people of color continue to be stereotyped and shut out, it seems that if Goldberg had to ask, he already knew the answer, mm-hmm. which I think is an excellent point and mm-hmm. probably very true. I don't even want to say what it was going to be, but the Craig Robinson character, who is called Mr. Grits,
yeah.
which, Jesus Christ, was originally going to be even more offensive. And the original version of the Craig Robinson character, which was just explicitly anti-black, like tested very, very poorly. And there was, at the movie's original premiere, someone, I guess, confronted Seth Rogen about it and was like, you can't fucking do this, dude. Like, this is disgusting. But that's the only change that I saw an example of being changed. Everything else stayed as is.
Boo.
Which, again, it's like, what if someone hadn't said something?
Right.
And it's like, and
then that would just be out in the world.
I mean, not that what is out, not that Mr. Grits is doing anything. Like, it's just,
Lavash, like, all of the, every character, fucking Firewater.
Every, I mean,
disgusting.
It's like, there's no, like, except for this character, which makes a ton of sense. Like, no.
It's heinous. Because you brought up Lindy West, who is an activist against fat shaming and fat phobia. And
also just famously one of my favorite writers.
Oh, she's terrific. It just reminded me of how much fat shaming there is in this movie, where like the other food characters are fat shaming Brenda the Bun. Another character, I forget who it is, but says that people, like humans, are to blame for getting fat because of all the food they consume. Just like all this like horrible fat phobic rhetoric.
Yeah, it's just bullshit. Like everything, like basically every word in this movie is bullshit. And also, like, it upholds, well, obviously it upholds all of everything, but even in a way that, like, I don't understand, because it's like, this is a movie written by Jewish writers, mm-hmm. who are going with their ethos of what they say they're doing, we're not exempt either. But the main character seems like he's coded as like a white Christian. So it's like,
right.
So it seems like, oh, well, the white Christian hero fucking cis hot dog guy is still the most curious of everyone and mm-hmm. like finds the truth and unites every culture. And it's like, that's like, what are you doing? That's right. That's all movies. Like, that's like fucking, I don't know. I like it. Obviously, this movie makes no sense.
Well, to piggyback on that, there's classic sexism happening with that too, because
oh yeah,
again, Frank is this character who's like, wait a minute, I'm a skeptic now. I have to seek the truth.
He literally, Bill Maher.
Yeah. he sets out to make the documentary religious, you know, and he's like, what's going on? But Brenda, his girlfriend, refuses to listen to Frank about the possibility that the great beyond might not be real. And yes, he is being very condescending and patronizing while he talks about it. But one of the few female characters in the movie is presented as being irrational and overly driven by her emotions. And again, he's interested in seeking the truth. She's not. She's just like, I'm going to, you know, blindly follow what I already believe. I'm not going to interrogate anything. And then she tries to like make him jealous when he's like, well, I can't even have a rational conversation with you. She's like, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to go fuck a pickle. And it's just like,
well, it's like also what? That they're this like, because they're like still in their package, that's supposed to be this really like sophisticated metaphor for virginity.
Purity.
But it's still more like, so, but you know, by the hot dog bun, blah, 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 like it's still more emphasized in the female coded, like it's more important that the buns are never been used than right. the hot dogs, which mm-hmm. is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. It is gross. Also, there's all this like male gaze,
yeah,
animation slash cinematography again.
Oh my god, the shot where douche is talking about like, I can't wait to get inside this woman. Yeah. Guarantee it, these writers do not know how any of this would actually go. Actually, but there's this like leering shot of like a cartoon woman's vagina, yeah. And you're like, why?
Yeah.
Why? Why? We already have like, oh, in case the vagina buns that also have boobs and butts weren't enough for you, like got you.
Yeah, so that's gross. I want to talk about the production and animation.
Yes,
specifically the way the animators were treated on this movie. I'm pulling from a couple different sources. One is a Washington Post piece, one is a Screen Rant piece. So there was this Q&A published on an animation news website called Cartoon Brew.
Cartoon Brew rocks.
And so there's a Q&A with the two directors of this movie, Greg Tiernan and Conrad Vernon. And the comments section of this Q&A basically turned into the animators commenting anonymously, complaining about the working conditions on the movie. And so like, that's kind of how this information came to be public information.
Yeah.
So the animators complained about director Greg Tiernan, who runs the animation company Nitrogen,
yes.
Who handled the animation for Sausage Party. He runs it with his wife, Nicole Stinn.
Also, unfortunately, we do have to claim that Sausage Party is Shrekian in that Conrad Vernon, one of the co-directors on feminist masterpiece Shrek 2.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really quite Shrekian.
And sorry to interrupt your very important discussion of labor rights, but
no, it's
that's also true.
It's important to know
when Shreks go wrong. But this is a very fascinating thing that has, I feel like, is a more popular discussion now. This seems like a more early example of it. Yeah.
Yes. So the animators were complaining that Mr. Greg would have enraged outbursts. There was a lot of micromanagement of the animators, and most despicably, a lot of labor that went unpaid because animators were forced to work overtime and would not be paid for it.
Yes.
I'll quote an excerpt from the Washington Post piece. The production costs were kept low because Greg would demand people work overtime for free. If you wouldn't work late for free, your work would be assigned to someone who would stay late or come in on the weekend. Some artists were even threatened with termination for not staying late to hit a deadline, unquote. So basically, animators, if they wanted to keep their job, were forced to work overtime for free. If they refused, they would potentially be fired. Many animators who worked on the movie were not credited as having worked on the movie because quit because of the horrible working conditions before the movie was finished. And anyone who quit was not credited, even though they worked on the movie for like over a year. Also, when animators tried to quit and like put in their notice, executives at Nitrogen would threaten to damage their reputations, which like is a pretty big deal because like getting blacklisted in this industry is a real concern. Like if you get blacklisted, like it is really hard
It could fuck your career. And they know that.
Permanently.
And,
yes.
Like, yeah.
So the animators were just like treated horribly. And because the animation was happening in Vancouver and Nitrogen is a Vancouver based company, which is like outside of the jurisdiction and protections of the Animation Guild in the US, they like weren't protected. I did read that eventually when Annapurna, which was like the production company that financed the movie, learned about all of this like labor mistreatment, they stepped in, they made sure the animators were paid for their overtime, and they were like, they made sure that the animators were being fed because a lot of them had to work these late hours in an area that was like difficult to like get food, and so they like, unless they brought their own food, they would have to work with like no access to food, and like it's pretty standard for like, especially on like film sets, for the production of the movie to feed the cast and crew. Like it's not people's responsibility who work on a production to feed themselves. So
this is so like, this is, I'm surprised, because you said you remember hearing about this at the time. I didn't know about this at the time. Just because I work in animation. I love animation. And this is so, I mean, labor disputes are typical across entertainment and across everywhere. But like in animation specifically, it is like improved so little over the years that I'm glad that there was a settlement. But I'm also like, there is no excuse for someone as powerful as this group of filmmakers to accept making this a non-union project. Like that is absolutely unacceptable. You can't treat your workers that way. And the reason you do is to save money and to mistreat them because like you're saying, like at this, this has happened on animation shows that I've worked on, and I've only ever worked as a writer, but even so, it's like, there's just still such an issue with how animation is treated within entertainment. Not that there aren't major labor issues in live action as well, but the unions in live action tend to be a little stronger, where you have SAG that represents animation performers as well, but not as often. The WGA, who are, it seems, about to strike, and I'm very thrilled, but the WGA still doesn't recognize most animation writers as writers that deserve union protections. Like,
ridiculous.
It blows. Like, I love to fucking run my mouth about this, but I've worked on six television shows, but I'm not in the WGA because I write in animation. It's ridiculous. And like some are fucking high budget. Like, why does writing on Star Trek not qualify you for the WGA? It's fucking ridiculous. And it's there is very, and animators especially,
I mean, this goes back to like Walt Disney union busting animators, like during the production of like Pinocchio. Like this has been going back. This has been going on in animation forever.
Harkening back to the Pinocchio Wars. Sorry.
Oh, my God. I still have PTSD from the Pinocchio Wars. but like there's, you know, animators have had to repeatedly strike and still have, I would say, generally less protections than their live action counterparts, which is ridiculous, especially because animation has grown only more popular and more widely, like every audience. I feel like it was like, oh, you make kiddie TV, like you don't deserve, which is also ridiculous. But now it's like there's animation across the board. There's no reason that they shouldn't be treated equally. It pisses me off. And I'm glad that they got a settlement, but it's just like it's so transparent. Where, and this, we sort of talked about this a little earlier, but how I think that like a similar dispute that you see right now is going on with the effects workers who work on Marvel movies, where there's only so many production houses that do this. They're desperate to stay in the good favor of Disney and Marvel. It's always fucking Disney with this stuff. They want to stay in the good graces of these huge contracts, and so they'll work people to death. And then like there, this was an issue with a director I generally like, but Taika Waititi, when the last I didn't see it, when his last Marvel movie came out, he was like making fun of how the effects looked in interviews, which prompted employees to be like, you didn't, like, Marvel did not give us the money or the time to finish this fucking movie. How dare you? Like, it's ridiculous.
That
how...
movie sucked. Thor Love and Thunder was like
I did not see it. I mean, I guess it's like I was like, oh, well, you can't always trust Rotten Tomatoes. But I did trust Rotten Tomatoes on that one and I didn't see it. But yeah, it's just animation and effects workers are historically treated like shit. And it's so like there's no excuse for anyone to do it, but particularly people who are this powerful and have access to the resources. It's not like we're an indie company and like we can only give you this much, which isn't acceptable either, but at least there's some context for it. There's no reason that this, that a production of this level needed to mistreat their workers so much. And that sucks because then everyone had to work on Sausage Party. Like, okay, well, if you want to read more about labor rights in the meatpacking industry, and also, then you should pick up a new book. It's out now. It's called Raw Dog. I learned a lot about how meatpacking employees, as well as animals, are severely mistreated in the process where most grocery store hot dogs like Frank are made. Also do some discussion of vegan hot dogs, of kosher hot dogs. There's so, the world of hot dogs is expansive.
It's vast.
It's vast.
It's effing vast.
And much,
you might even say.
And much like the animation, workers' rights have not improved by very much over the last 100 years. So that's fucking sick. We love that.
We love that. Do you have anything else you want to say about Sausage Party?
No.
Me either.
It passes the Bechdel test, but it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
And I give it no nipples.
And the way women interact with each other, which is not often, because again, there's only really two... There's one major female character in Brenda, and then there's a more minor character in Teresa.
Yeah.
Other than that, any female coded characters have like maybe a line or two, and even that's rare. So most of the characters we meet are male coded. So there's really very little interaction between women. Although Brenda and Teresa do pass the Bechdel test because they talk about their sexual urges for each other. So
Sure, it counts. It counts.
But the way that women or like female coded characters interact with each other outside of that is like a lot of like the buns will be calling each other disparaging, like sexist words, like, oh, you bitch, oh, you skank, stuff like that.
Yeah. And then so, we referenced this, but I guess the only other thing I have to say is the ableism that's present in the Michael Cera character, and also that they suggest that he is disabled in some way, and that the only way that he could find a partner is to find another disabled partner, which is how that plays out in the end, which is just, I mean, like... It feels worth it. I don't even want to get into it, really, because it's just so fucked and ugly. And this movie is, I agree with Letterboxd, this movie is evil.
Yeah.
I don't want to say another word about this movie. No nipples. Done.
No, I would say -5 nipples. And it's okay, like yeah. especially...
I'll meet you there. Thanks. -5. This movie is evil.
The last thing I'll say about it is... It's especially frustrating to me when there's a movie that's attempting to make commentary on some kind of like societal or cultural thing, because it is attempting to say things like having blind faith in a deity can be dangerous, or
which sure
attaching shame to sexuality and making people feel shame if they have sex, like quote unquote out of wedlock, or if they have sexual feelings toward someone of their same gender, the way that a lot of religions do, you know, saying that that's wrong, or taking a religious text and distorting it to push your own agenda of prejudice and oppression, that's bad. Yeah, I agree with those things. But for the movie to try to make those claims and then turn around and put every reductive trope in existence into the movie and punch down to so many groups of marginalized people, do you even hear yourself?
No.
Sausage party. Anyway, this movie sucks. I hate it. -5 nipples. And buy Jamie's book.
Please buy my book, Raw Dog, by Jamie Loftus. We're going to put, we'll put the link for where you can buy it. I prefer to use bookshop.org. That will automatically link you to the closest independent bookstore that you can order it from and have it shipped from that is carrying the book. And please tell your friends. It's really helpful, and I'm very proud of it. And also,
awesome.
If you live in the cities, let's see if I remember, of Los Angeles, San Francisco, Austin, Portland, Oregon, Boston, Brooklyn, and
Chicago,
and somewhere in Connecticut called the Mark Twain House. Those are the 8 places I will be going to promote the book. There will be events, and we will link tickets as well, because I will be leaving this week. So please, please come out.
Indeed. And all the regular stuff, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. You can go to our Patreon, aka Matreon, and get access to 2 bonus episodes every month, plus the entire back catalog of bonus episodes. This month of May is my birthday, and we are doing Office Space and redoing Back to the Future, because our first Back to the Future episode has audio quality that is not great.
And we have bigger
brains. And it's one of my favorite movies, so I want to just do an updated version of the episode.
You can check out our merch at teepublic.com/thebechdelcast if you are interested. Grab a little merch and
Have a t-shirt.
Hope to see you on the road soon. Love you. Bye.
Bye.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ+ bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
This is Amy Brown from 4 Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that Healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.